Hello, good, square bracket open, insert appropriate time of day here, square bracket closed. And welcome to GMC Does America, special of the Hackerspace Hour. Well, we've got some catching up to do, because last week we were of course talking to Fish and friends from Japan. I've got a lot of stuff lined up for this show. Let's look at a short overview. First of all, I went to Davenport in Iowa, where I went to the QC Colab. It's a very cool space. I talked with one of the founders of the space. There was a lot of positive energy there, so I think it's a nice item. I went to Chicago after that, where I actually got to visit the last existing pinball factory on the world, and got to talk with the owner of that. Wow, what is there? Chicago again. I went to a very interesting electronic and experimental music workshop and conference concert, where there was a lot of circuit bending going on. I've recorded some of that, so that's up for later in the show. I went to Detroit, where I saw a very big hackerspace and I talked to one of the inspiring people. I've been meeting so many inspiring people along this trip. I wish I could let you share in all of that, but well, there's only limited time on the radio, and in any case, if you really want to experience that, you should do a trip like this yourself. I can wholeheartedly recommend it. It's been so rewarding so far. Well, I went to a lot of other places in between. I will shortly go into that. I went, for example, to Buffalo, which is quite an interesting city. As I'm recording this, I'm on my way between Boston and New York. Boston was quite interesting. I went to MIT, for example, and my legs still hurt and I've got scratches everywhere. If you want to know how that came to be, stay tuned, because I will go into that. That's about it for this show. So yeah, let's start with Aaron. I'm in Davenport, Iowa. I'm here with Aaron at the QC Colab. Hi, Aaron.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for talking to me. You were a quite recent hackerspace, I think. How long have you been in existence here?
Well, we formed our organization April 20th this year, and we had our grand opening in September. So,
It's November. That's a couple of 3-4 months ago.
Yep.
I'm impressed at what you've accomplished here in the short time. I mean, if I look at the projects that are already going on, you're forging metal, for example.
The projects that we have going on here are fun for me and amazing all at the same time. We wanted to do something special for grand opening to really cement our being here, that we are the QC Colab. And David came up with the idea to bronze a coin that we made ourselves on the 3D plastic printer, the MakerBot. So we got our MakerBot, we put that together, then we learned how to use Blender, the 3D software, to make the 3D coin. And even watching the coin go through iterations on the 3D printer, from the first one to the one that we have now with beveled edges that are smooth so that it won't stick into the sand.
Okay.
Well, then we sand casted the plastic coin and then used a homemade forge that we built using just Sack Creek concrete, a little bit of kitty litter, and some fire brick. And that turned into being able to pour molten bronze into a cast that we made ourselves in the plastic printer, and now we're bronzing things.
Amazing. You didn't know anything about this, right? I mean, most of the people here, I understand, are software people, network people.
We're very, very mental, is a good word, in a good way. A lot of what we do here at the Colab, or a lot of what the folks do at the Colab, is all software-based. It's all technology, but we don't actually take it apart. And I think that part of what spurred us being here is we wanted so much to actually learn about the things that we were so ingrained in. I mean, I use a computer every day of my life, but before here, I really probably couldn't have told you that much about what was in it.
Okay. It's also a place of education. I mean, the location you're in, it's part of a campus of a college?
Yep, we lease space from a community college. They're a for-profit educational institute that focuses on hardware hacking. They're teaching the all the way from never having soldered before to being able to work on high end HVAC systems and integrated circuits. I mean, they're really doing a good job of putting people into the workforce, and they're a great partner to have as a hackerspace.
I can imagine. I had a look around at the campus just now, and I saw that there's robotics going in there, PLCs indeed, and CNC mills, all kinds of interesting. So that's a good combination, I guess.
Well, I always look at it as some of the stuff that they have over there, we would love to have, and we're doing that in our own DIY method. The MakerBot was just the first of what I can imagine to be many things. The next thing that we really want to do is a low power laser cutter. Okay. Using like a diode from a Blu-ray player.
Oh yeah.
1 watt, you know, not a lot, not gonna cut your hand off, but we might be able to put the Colab logo on your fingernail. That kind of kind of idea. So
that's funny.
They've got the big toys and that's okay in some respects. But I think the way that we're doing the do-it-yourself mentality is not only allowing us to learn how to operate them, but literally why they operate that way. It takes the how and blows it up.
Wow.
So I for us, it's exciting because, like I said, a lot of us have never been around anything like this. And even though we are highly technical and most of the people here are so much smarter than me, when it comes to how to put solder on or what the colors on a resistor mean, you'll get some deer-eyed, doe-eyed faces that just have no idea what it is.
Oh.
And if I can be a part of not only teaching, but learning from the people that I'm teaching, I don't know how we could pass that up.
No, that's great, yeah. Learning and teaching at the same time, that's absolutely brilliant. I wonder what's the secret of your success? I mean, in so few months, you have put together so much already. I've seen hackerspaces that have been around for 2 years and haven't been as far as this. What's the secret?
I could probably boil it down into two basic things. One is that we throw the word around a lot here. It's called duocracy. It's democracy without the vote. We kind of assume that the people that we have as members are all top level good people. And it's not saying that we have a litmus test to become a member, but the kind of folks that we attract are intelligent and able bodies. We let them have the freedom. The QC Colab itself provides four walls and a front door. You are the Colab. I mean, you being here right now is the Colab. And as soon as we let people understand that they had the freedom to take out a wall, if that wall didn't need to be there, the walls started coming down. I mean, as soon as people realized that if they wanted a network jack in a wall, then they needed to plumb that network cable, cut the hole in the wall, and install the jack. And by empowering every single one of our members to understand that they have just as much ownership as any other member, everything started happening.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
If somebody wants security cameras, then they go out, they research how much they're going to cost, they put together a quote, they come to the group and say, I need $700. We want to buy a high-end security camera. And the group goes, okay, that seems reasonable. You brought a good plan. You know what you're doing. You're the guy that's going to be doing it. Who are we to tell you that that's wrong? And then they do it. The other part, and I think it's only made possible by the social media aspect, Twitter has been huge for getting people into the space.
Okay.
Not new members, but existing members. There's a lot of times where I've been sitting at home at 9 o'clock on a random night, and then I see on Twitter that two or three people showed up. Well, it's not that big of a deal to get in my car and that I'm here with. Yeah. And we keep the fridge stocked. And we encourage people to bring friends, non-members, and so I would say that by empowering our members, by giving them not the tools to do, but just giving them the freedom to do, you'd be surprised at what people are capable of.
True. I like that policy a lot. That's That's truly something that I think every hackerspace should abide by. Has that resulted in any projects? I understand there will be classes taught pretty soon. Maybe you can tell us something about that.
Yeah, a big part of our mission as a nonprofit is education. We're not an educational institute, but we've got so many smart people that are willing to share what they know for next to nothing, that why wouldn't we want to? Our first big event here was the soldering workshop with Mitch Altman, and that was huge. That was fun. It was enjoyable, and we wanted to take his kind of message of sharing education and bring that from our own folks to our own local community. The first thing that we're going to be doing is this Friday we're going to start up our Arduino programming class. And if you've ever used an Arduino, you know that you're limited really only by what you can make it do. And we have some programmers here who can run circles around me in just about any programming language. And these guys are bursting at the seams to share that knowledge with other folks. Not because they want to jam an idea down somebody, but because they want other people to be able to bounce that idea off of. If we have one great Arduino programmer, yeah, that's nice. But if we have 20 great Arduino programmers, then that's even better. And fun hacking is the best way to get people into space. There's hacking that we do that I think sometimes is fun to diehard hackers, that somebody else might look at and go, what are those guys doing standing around that computer? So things like pouring bronze for casting teach somebody how to do something, but it's something that you're not going to do at home in your backyard by yourself. Part of it is the barrier to technology, and things like our Arduino programming class are going to knock that barrier out of the water. The Arduinos are cheap. And the technology behind it is open source, but if you don't have any base knowledge, sometimes it's scary to go spend $30 or $40 on equipment and buy a book and read it yourself. Whereas here, and I wouldn't say that we're hand holders, but we give you the information that you need to teach yourself. We also would love to be able to break that out into more than programming. We'd love for a welder to come into the space and start teaching welding classes. And it's not that we want to go find a speaker. We want somebody who's passionate about welding, who's passionate about what they do and passionate about sharing that. I always say that folks could be doing what they're doing here in any garage in America or any garage in the country, in the world. Yep. But people come here because of us. I mean, because of the folks.
The rest, the people that hang out, the community. Yeah. It's brilliant. I think that very much vibrates with the ideas I have of what a hackerspace should be. I mean, you can discuss long and short about it, but community, teaching, learning, those are the core elements, I think. I thank you for talking to me.
Thank you.
Best of luck with the space. I think you're going to be a definite hit in a year from now.
We appreciate you coming.
Even more than now. So thanks again, and hopefully see you again.
Thank you.
I'm in a very busy warehouse. There's about 40, 50, 60 people here working. You can hear that in the background. That's the sound of pinball games being assembled and tested. I'm at Stern Pinball Incorporated, the last pinball manufacturer in the world. And I got the honor of being taken on a tour of this facility and actually speaking to Gary Stern.
Yeah, it's great to see the factory. It's really busy still, even on a Friday afternoon. Yep. Mm-hmm. So you're still making a lot of games, I guess.
Yeah, we are. We're making a lot of different models, too. We're making Avatar, Iron Man. You probably saw some Shrek out there.
Batman.
Big Buck Hunter, and some Spider-Man. Yeah. It's we're like a Chinese restaurant, you know, one from Conway. And we're getting ready to make, to announce that we're going to make a numbered limited edition of our Avatar pinball machine, Avatar Premium Limited Edition,
okay.
Which will, besides having all the decoration of the chrome and so forth, will have some different mechanical features in it.
Oh, wow.
So it'll be, you know, it'll have It'll have more going on than a regular
it'll
avatar.
It'll be a real special one.
Very special.
Yeah, I love the back glass on the avatar.
Isn't that fantastic?
The 3D. Yeah. That's
well, it's a 3D movie. We had to do that. So where do you play?
Mostly at home and at the Dutch Pinball Association. We have a clubhouse with a lot of games. Uh-huh. And we've been seeing some of the newer Stern games coming in as well. Because
what about in pubs or...
not really. You don't see them that often anymore. I'm now on this trip. I've been here for 3 weeks now. I do see them in if you get a burger or... I see games, but a lot more than we have in the Netherlands.
If you go to our website, we have a section on it where you can look up where games are in America.
Okay.
We probably ought to add that for other countries.
Country.
You'd notice that I'm asking you questions instead of you asking me anything. I'm more interested in what you're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what I'm doing. I sort of know what we're doing.
That's better.
I don't
want to
get carried away with it.
Yeah.
So I have an idea.
You have been in the pinball business for a while already.
I like to say 63 years because I was two when my father bought Williams.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
so that's where it started.
Now, so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so
and Williams
been in it. Now he died before we started this company. He died in 1984, and this company was started in 1986 as Data East Pinball, and then became Sega Pinball, then Stern Pinball, which means that next year, or in 2 months or some such thing, it's actually November. It'll be November of 2011.
A year from now,
it'll be 25 years old.
Oh wow!
This Stern Pinball.
That's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Data East. That's where my favorite game was made. The Simpsons.
The first Simpsons. We made a second Simpsons.
I know. I love that as well. But still, the first Simpsons. That's my favorite all time. That's
in that genre of games. I very much like Family Guy.
Mm. No, I've recently played that.
Family Guy is more popular in America than it is in... The TV show is more popular in America than
probably,
outside of this country.
It's quite popular in Holland as well.
How long do you think it's been popular in Holland? Family Guy.
Family Guy, sorry. Recently, I think a year or so that they started airing it.
It's very hard to budget to see where you're at. And your cost... Manufacturing costs in America are going, and worldwide, we hear the same thing everywhere. Volumes are down, so costs are up. Everybody's afraid to hire people, so all our suppliers, so forth, so they work overtime. You know, it costs to hire people, it costs to lay them off, you know. Uh-huh. So they keep working the same number of people, so these people have no work, and these people got lots of overtime, and we have to pay more for that. And then you can't get electronic parts because a lot of the assembly lines were shut down when the business community weakened, and they've never restarted them that much.
Okay.
You know, because it costs a lot of money to restart a line and then to mothball it again.
Correct.
Yeah.
But it's all everything is produced in the USA. It's all...
We buy everything in the USA.
Okay.
Some of our things are, you know, are produced elsewhere, but our suppliers are all U.S. Chicagoland area companies.
Okay.
Now they may have some of their production offshore or buy something offshore.
Yes. Yeah.
But we buy it all here. You know, to buy in China or Philippines, whatever, you have to have a staff over there checking and working. Well,
Not that big. Yeah. So I still see that there's, it's really busy in the factory. Yeah. How many games do you turn out per day?
Depends. It goes up and down.
Okay.
You know, we're probably averaging, a lot more sometimes. It's very seasonal business, 20, 25 a day, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
We can ramp up if we have to or slow down if we have to. But usually it's we follow the demand.
Okay.
Yep. As we get orders, we can speed it up try to get them out.
Yeah. You can imagine the summertime; it's slower than it is, and between Christmas and New Year's, actually, we'd like to build games for Europe because then we put them on the boats.
Okay.
Nobody needs a game to take delivery of it in the U.S. at that time.
Okay. And would you say it's more like homeowners who buy the games these days, or is
it both operators and homeowners? But in America, more so than elsewhere, it's probably have homeowners. But not necessarily people who are enthusiasts like you are, but people are just general homeowners, you know, that just want a game in their home, not really collectors or enthusiasts.
Okay.
See, in Holland you have homeowners like you all that are mostly collectors and enthusiasts.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of them.
We need to broaden that base to more people.
Definitely. That's But are there still a lot of operators left in the US? Because in the Netherlands, it's
not a lot. It's down from what it was. Yeah. But there's still business here. No.
Doors closing. Irving Park is next. Doors open on the right at Irving Park. Your safety is important. If you observe unattended packages, vandalism, or suspicious activity, inform CTA personnel immediately.
When you give a bunch of electronic nerds a big fat PA to play with. I recorded that bit of audio at MECAS. MECAS, that's short for the Midwestern Experimental Electronics Conference and Showcase. They've been meeting in Chicago every Saturday between, I think, noon and 3 in a bar called the Lizard's Liquid Lounge. I happened to stop by there just at the right moment because they had their annual conference and concert series. So I got to listen to some of the music they make. What they do, they are basically circuit benders. They build their own instruments. They modify existing sound-producing circuits like kids' toys. It was really interesting to see what kind of projects they had there. For example, there was a guy who was building devices. Basically, he put six LEDs in a circular arrangement. Then had an arm with a motor that swings over the LEDs constantly. You can vary the intensity of the LED, and that via the sensor in the swinging arm determines the pitch of the sounds that's generated. So you basically have a sort of a really physical implementation of a sequencer. That produced nice noises. They used a 5x5 timer. Something else that I saw was performance by Alex Iglesias. He is a big synthesizer fan. He likes the analog synthesizers, but he also built some synthesizers himself using basically nothing more than a bunch of 7400 Logic chips. In the afternoon, people had a workshop. You could see all the exhibits and the self-created instruments, and I met a lot of interesting people there. In the evening were the concerts. I wish I could let you listen to all of these, because it was really, well, it was brilliant to the level of performance. But unfortunately, I have limited time, so I have to make selections. I want to listen to Alex Iglesias. I've selected just 1 or 2 minutes from his total performance of about 40 minutes. Thank you. Midwest and specifically Chicago or Chicagoland is a hotbed for electronic and experimental music. Another group that is from around here is CMKT4. They are three guys. They do a lot of interesting thing with circuit bending. They made a whole performance of it. They were had costumes. They were basically from another planet, attracted to Earth by the shininess of our kids' toys. And they really got busy on them. They opened them up. They raped them. They produced all kinds of sounds. There's only one way to explain it, and that's just to listen to it. Last performance that night, but not least, was by Tim Kaiser. He's considered by many to be the godfather of circuit bending. After the performance, he answered a few questions from the audience about his instruments, his musical thinking, where he got his sounds from. And I will play some of the answers. I apologize for the audio quality. The microphone was not close enough to the speaker. I amped it up, but well, there's a bit of noise in the background. First question was about the numbers and beeps in the background of the performance.
The numbers are numbers stations. The background to talking on numbers, yeah. There's this thing, it was really big during the Cold War. Foreign governments, when they needed to talk to their operatives in other parts of the world, would broadcast on shortwave series of numbers that were spaced a certain way or whatever so that their spies could decode them. And they were all over the shortwave, and you could find them at all weird times and whatnot. There's still some going on today. It's how they pass information to their foreign agents.
Still?
Yeah, Cuba I know is still going. I'm pretty sure the Russians are too.
As a circuit bender, Tim is quite creative in how he gets his instruments. When asked by the audience how he got them, this is his elaboration.
I have 15-year-old twin boys, and they're, you know, a great couple of guys. But we've had a rule in my house since there are very little that if they break it, it's dad's. So, this is actually my son Alden's old Nintendo. And it went down some concrete stairs and didn't fare too well. So, I had to buy him the next Nintendo, of course. So, I, you know, hobbled it back together and put it in this old cigar box with the funky lamp. And my son says it's the ugliest DS in the world. And I'm running a piece of the software from Japan called Electroprinting, and I highly recommend if you that you draw. drop tables. I mean, you get electroplankton. It's cool. It's very cool.
Electro what?
Plankton.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you use a stylus to
manipulate it. I noticed some of the boxes have kind of wind up for telephone dial quality. What does that change as?
Well, the wind up things are actual music box movements or escapements. Okay. And I've got this one box that's got like 10 escapements in it.
Yeah.
My buddy Paul gave me a whole, just a sack full of little music boxes. Most of them, you know, they marinate a little in or Brahms Lullaby or whatever. So what you do is you take them apart and you bust off most of the little keys so it only plays three notes.
Yeah.
And so, like this one plays, I think, a few more notes, but I have a couple of escapements in there. And when you get them going, I have no idea what notes it's going to play. So it's kind of a aleatoric little thing. But I like the tones that the little things make. And I also like the sound of the crank.
Yeah.
Turning the flywheel spring up. And the phone dial is a phone dial. And my theremin is patched through it before it goes to the delay.
Okay.
And the phone dial, a rotary phone, for those of you old enough to remember rotary phones, I see a couple of you. How the phone company used to know what number you were dialing was the number of clicks or pauses. You turn in the dial, and a phone, a rotary phone dial is basically a reed switch that does this. So if you dial 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. If you dial 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And that's their switching system understood that. Well, anyway, a long time ago I was at the Goodwill, and they had rotary phones for 49 cents, and they had like a truckload. And I'm thinking, I cannot pass up all of these rotary phones, so I just bought them all. Speculatively. And a while later I started building theremins, the standard radio wave, dual oscillator super heterodyne type theremins. And I was using the case for the phone as the base for the theremin. And then my father-in-law was a physicist and I inherited several dozen Geiger counters. And so I would use the wands for those as the antenna. So if you look at my website, there's a whole bunch of those. I've made dozens. I saw them all over the world. But I still had all these dials left over. So I thought, I got to do something with these dials. And one day I was just playing with just the dial and looking at it and realized that the switch was just opening and closing really fast, which is essentially what a vibrato is. You know, your signal, no signal, signal, no signal. So I figured, pass the signal through the phone dial, you dial 0 for the longest, and just, and so the piece that's the white noise wind kind of sound. Is the choppy part is the phone dial, opening and closing the signal chain rapidly. So that's what that is.
Is that playing?
Thank you.
I'm in Detroit with i3 Detroit. I'm talking to Ross, the president of this hackerspace. Hi.
Hi, Cohen. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. It's a really big space. How big is this?
The space is about 8,000 square feet.
Wow.
We have 1,000 in office space in the front, which is divided into a kitchen, a crafting room, a chemistry lab, an electronics lab, a bathroom with a shower, and then about 7,000 square feet in the back for everything else. And that is a warehouse space.
Yeah, it's an industrial space, a concrete floor. There's a lot of equipment here. In the back, there's a whole room with metal and woodworking equipment.
Yes, we've got a Bridgeport manual milling machine. We've got a large metalworking lathe, a few smaller milling machines and lathes, some presses, bandsaws, table saws. It's very much outfitted for people who work with aluminum and steel and wood for large carpentry and fabrication projects, yes.
It makes me wonder, how do you finance all this? I mean, that's a couple of tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment there.
Yes, well, there are a couple factors working in our favor. We've got, making lemonade out of lemons. We have economic downturn here in Detroit, and that means a lot of tools are selling on the cheap from manufacturing companies that are closing their doors. Mm. I'm certain that's how we came across a few of our larger pieces, which also means they're not very new. And because it's a business that has to get rid of its stock, it goes generally for a lower price.
Okay.
As an organization, we don't tend to buy these things. It's individual members who want very much for us to have a milling machine who get together, they pool their money, and they make the purchase as a group of about four people. And they retain private ownership of it, and then they move it into the space for everyone to use.
Okay, so that makes sense. Normally people will want to play with this equipment, but really don't have the space at home. I think, well, Detroit is very spread out. Is it the same here? Do you think there's a lot of people that, I don't know how to say this. I mean, what we talked about earlier, you know?
Oh, yes, right. As far as Metro Detroit being more of a suburban area to have a hackerspace instead of, say, an urban space like New York. Yeah, I think it's an interesting difference. As a suburban hackerspace, Metro Detroit, you know, i3 Detroit, brings a lot of people together for social reasons. They want to be together. They want to be in a community full of creative, inventive, polymath-type people. The thing is, though, that most of us have enough real estate, you know, in our homes to have most of this equipment or to have a lot of the equipment for the space it consumes. I think that sort of sets us apart and other urban hackerspaces apart from us because they tend to need the space just to have the tools. So if you have an apartment, you really don't have room enough for a table saw. And so if you get a community space, you're able to have a table saw. Yeah. That's not as much the problem here, where you can have a table saw at home, but you choose to come to i3 Detroit to share it with other people and to work on group projects.
Oh, that's cool. Talking about group projects, I see there's a robot in here. There are even kids building robots here, I've heard.
Yes, there is a competition here in the U.S. called FIRST Robotics. FIRST Robotics allows students to build their own robots and enter them into, like, robotic soccer competitions, for instance. i3 Detroit sponsored two FIRST Robotics teams last year, and this year we're sponsoring one. We actually open up our shop for these kids to come in, usually 10 to 20 kids at a time, and they go and they occupy a full corner of our shop and they work on their robot. This year we've actually allocated a significant chunk of our shop to be just for them, and the workbenches and the bins and the tools are laid out just for their use.
That's cool, yeah. So I imagine that also requires, because you've got a lot of dangerous equipment in here, it requires some supervision, I think. You don't want kids cutting off their fingers or anything, although it would be a great learning experience for them. But
it would
the
be.
The parents might probably not be as happy with that.
It would be a learning experience.
Because this is a volunteer-run space, right?
It is, yes. We have no dedicated staff. We have no interns. Everything we do here is people in their spare time giving to the space. Yeah, it's a very good question. We all want to involve kids more as a general rule, but because we have so many power tools, it makes it difficult for insurance reasons. So we have a few safeguards against that. We have a fairly involved waiver that you must sign at the door when you come to visit i3 Detroit. It essentially says, not that you're signing your life away, but that if you harm yourself in here, you are sufficiently warned in advance that this is a place where people use power tools and that could happen. And especially in the case for kids and for FIRST Robotics, we have a very lengthy waiver that we ask both the kids and the adults to sign so that when they come, they have parental supervision and they're very much aware of the risks. To help reassure them, though, we are purchasing an insurance policy which covers liability specifically for minors in our space.
Okay.
So we can have up to 10 to 20 minors in our space at a given time, and we pay the premium of maybe an extra $200 a month to allow that.
Okay. Well, that's quite expensive, but worth it, I guess.
Is it? Well, hold on. No, actually, I think I'm misquoting the numbers. I think it's about $200 a year. It's
okay.
It's not too much more, and that's why it was very attractive to us.
Yeah, then why not, indeed? And you should really do it. It's, I see a lot of great projects in here. There's a huge statue of, it's made of duct tape.
Ah, yes, the Red Green, yeah. Red Green is a Canadian comedian, and he's well-known in this area of the United States, Michigan, and sort of the northern zone. Red Green, his motto is, if your woman can't find you handsome, at least she can find you handy. And he fixes everything with duct tape. He actually had one episode where he takes a car that was cut in half down the middle, and he shows you how to use duct tape to weld it back together, and then he drives it around. You know, of course, it's a good show. It's good comedy. Red Green, the comedian, was coming down to our city for a show. One of our members, Nick Britsky, decided that he wanted Red Green to come visit the space. And he wrote to him and said, if we build a gigantic statue of you out of duct tape, will you visit I3 Detroit? And he said yes. So Nick Britsky ordered, actually he didn't order, he wrote to the 3M company that makes duct tape and said, we're doing this gigantic project, is there anything you can do to help us? And a few days later, we have these big pallets full of yellow and black and red colored duct tape, and they said, here you go, now go ahead and build it. Which was awesome.
Yeah. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. It's one of the special things I'm seeing here. You also have a chemical lab in here. There's an electronics workplace.
We do, yeah.
Forklifts.
Ah, jeez. If I were to list off all the different zones we've got, I'm very proud that we can host as much as we do here. We've got, yes, an electronics lab, a craft room, a chemistry lab. We have, and I'm just looking around the space now from our vantage point, we have a welding bench so you can do steel and iron welding. We have a bicycle repair shop. Basically in one bench. One of our members is a 10-year-long bike mechanic, and he brought in his tools, and he set up that bench, and he does classes on that. We have a commons meeting area. We've got the corner of the space for FIRST Robotics. We have the machine and metalworking shop in the back, and a bunch of member storage and a bunch of electronics component storage.
Yeah, and even a vinyl cutter, well, a piano powered by hard disks. Mm. It's amazing. Everyone in the neighborhood of Detroit should definitely check it out. Ross, thanks for talking to me.
Thank you, Colin.
Good luck with your space.
Thanks.
After Detroit, I went to Toronto in Canada, so I actually left the country, which I was a bit apprehensive about. I didn't know if getting back into the United States was going to be easy or even possible. As it turned out, that all worked out. They just asked me some questions again and searched my belongings. Toronto was quite nice. They have a really interesting hackerspace there. I got there on a Tuesday night, and it was busy, and the MakerBot was churning out projects with the automated build platform. There was a whole contingent doing lockpicking. People were discussing programming language and designing new programming languages. I had a great time there. After that, I, as I said, went back into the country, and I went to Buffalo. Well, Buffalo is an interesting city. Basically, half of the buildings there are empty. Houses, businesses, they're all closed because people are moving out to the suburbs, to the sprawl. And it leaves a whole area of ghost town in the middle of this urban area. That was quite interesting, but you see a lot of interesting initiatives pop up in the spaces that are empty, artistic initiatives. And one thing I especially liked was the concept of urban farms. Basically, because a lot of houses are empty, they are being demolished, and whole plots of land become available. And people are starting farms on there and growing vegetables and other crop. I went to one of these farms, talked to one of the persons behind it. Let's listen to that. I'm in Buffalo today. I'm standing here with Janice Stevens. And you are one of the people behind the urban farm, which is where we are. What's an urban farm?
It's just a place to grow food in the city.
Okay, that's very...
Bigger than a small garden.
Yeah, because it is quite big. How did you this field? It's just in the middle of an urban area. Was it just available, or?
Well, there used to be about 27 houses on this land, and they over the past 10 years or so, I don't know how long, they one by one have gone down. So there's just this big empty space, and we moved here about 3 years ago. Looked out here and said we can do something here. We used to live on a farm, a real farm, out in the middle of nowhere. It's what I like to do, and so we could bring it here in the city and do it.
It's great, yeah, because I see a lot of the houses around here are empty, right?
There are a lot of vacant homes, yes.
Yeah, because I've seen a lot of empty houses and business properties. Buffalo is basically, everyone is leaving, it seems. Yeah.
Well, the industry is gone, and it's hard to find work. People move out to the suburbs and leave the inner city empty.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so, and then the houses get demolished, and you can reclaim the land for farming. And I understand you also work with local people here.
We try to get people to come volunteer. We're completely open to having the neighborhood help. We've had some neighborhood people come, not a lot of them, but some have worked here. We sell the vegetables right off during the summer.
Okay.
Right here off the property.
Yeah, because obviously it's now winter. There's not a lot going on at the moment.
Well, I have a few things. CSAs, which are community-supported agriculture, where people pay. The way I set it up this year, since it's our first year, is they pay on a month-by-month basis. And they'll get a package of vegetables every week they come and pick up. So I'm still doing that because we have the hoop house and we have greens that are hardy through the cold.
Okay. So yeah, what kind of crops do you? I see you need a greenhouse, and there's a couple of plots here with where things are growing.
We grow about everything that doesn't take a lot of space. A lot of times it's easier to say what we don't grow. We don't grow corn or potatoes. We don't grow winter squash that takes up a lot of space, or cabbage, which takes a lot of space. A lot of greens. We grew a lot of tomatoes and peppers, green onions,
interesting.
Lettuces, herbs.
Okay. Well, it's a very nice initiative, bringing the production of food back to the people, actually, because, well, it's something we don't see. We live in the cities and we don't go out to the farms anymore. So, yeah, thanks for talking to me, and good luck next year with the crops and everything. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for your interest.
I had a really nice chat with Janice. I stayed afterward a bit, so I found out when they started on this plot of land, the city was not really willing to support the project. But then the media got a hold of the story, and public opinion got behind this project. So now they have an official lease for the plot of land. It's a special lease, of course. And, they don't have to be afraid of being evicted. That was Buffalo. Buffalo, as well as Detroit, by the way, it shows the decline of the economy in this region of the country. Also, the hackerspace where I went is in Buffalo is an example of this. It's a huge industrial complex. I believe it used to be a soap factory, and when you go in there, it's amazing. They have all kinds of strange rooms and spaces, and huge spaces, small spaces. I was lucky they put up some signs, and or else I would never have been able to find the hackerspace there. So if you're in Buffalo, definitely go check out the hackerspace. The space itself is actually quite well equipped. They have a lot of stuff there, and I think it's I had some fun there. It's worth a visit if you're there. Well, of course, I went to Rochester. I met someone who's doing an open mat. I'd love to chat about it, but well, this show is coming to an end, so I will save that for later. I went to Syracuse. If you are around Syracuse, I would definitely recommend you to check out the Syracuse Innovators Guild. Look it up on Google, the Syracuse Innovators Guild. They are a very enthusiastic group. They just got the space and got themselves set up as a as an organization. They have a lot of plans and enthusiasm and energy to put into this space. So if you're into that, definitely check them out and be part of the unique experience of actually building a hackerspace. I did it once, I can wholeheartedly recommend it. Syracuse, I left and I went on to Boston, which proved to be a lot of interesting and unique experiences. For one, I got to stay, I stayed the night in Builds, which is a hackerspace in the basement of the computer science building of Boston University. So yeah, I woke up one morning, on Monday morning, took my towel, my toothbrush and went to the restroom to wash up. And all around me were classes going on, so that was kind of funny. I also went to MIT, where I got an unofficial tour under and over the university buildings. They have a hobby there. It's they call it hacking. Basically, they explore the buildings. It's like urban exploration. They go to the areas that normally you don't go. I ended up in some strange spaces. At some point, I had to climb up to the ceiling. Using the gate that was there, that climb into a ventilation duct, then go down the store and crawl further on, and it was amazing. We ended up on some roofs, I had a nice view of Boston. So yeah, I think that about wraps up the show today. I had a lot more fun in Boston. I went to Sprouts, where there's someone setting up a DIY bio lab called Boss Lab. I had an interview with him, but alas, we are out of time. I will save that for the next show. I also went to Artisans Asylum, which is an awesome space. They've been busy. They've been at it for 6 months, but it's huge and they've got equipment. It makes your mouth water. But well, I'm in New York currently. It's a Thanksgiving today, actually, so I'm going to partake in a traditional Thanksgiving dinner with turkey, sweet potato pie, and booze, of course. So I'm looking forward to that. In the meantime, to say goodbye, let's listen to a bit of MC from the lot.
You are likely to be eaten. Likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture a match in your inventory. It got narrated at you in the second person. Every time you put it up, it seemed you got another version of your life told to you by a status line blinking. The impossible people you could be without thinking. Yourself insane of personality problems. With a mop on a dropship or trying to stab a goblin that don't play. In public life, you get arrested. Psychoactive medication daily in your big intestine. And the testing that the voices in your head said the dwarf shot first. Embedded arrow, then you bled for doctors with needles. Posit repeatedly that you knocked down that midget in the park unneededly. This has seeded the idea that you should never venture from the house. Never get misunderstood by the non-player characters inhabiting Earth. None of whom are too concerned about Norton Burt. Not one of whom ever aimed to fish around the room trying to get it in the ear canal because doom beset the last planet they were on or near. The verge of a set of poetics they wouldn't hear. Never appeared at the clues with invisible ink. No SM goddesses ever gave them pause to think. Never piloted six robots, each distinct. Don't matter how many 2 liters they drink, they're not going to follow what you're saying at all. They impute and appall in the scope of their gall. As you hide in your room in disgust with the lights turned out, turn them on in a turn, leave them off for now. You are likely to be eaten. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture a match in your inventory. You read the
pamphlet from a mailbox that urges low cunning. Offers cursor and font type running, you're running it. Parses what you tell it, pronouns intact. Abbreviations if you need them, better keep it grammatic. Better punctuate your sentences and never redact the name of anything ambiguous, you're about to get asked. You meet the red one, the round one, the crooked or the blue. Better keep that in your pocket, don't know yet what it could do. Could be the spray for the groove, gonna need it if it is a situation that reloads, restarts or quits. Wonder how many points, after how many points you gotta get before you're done. Endeavor then to rejoice when you wish more ardently identity shed. For continuance, the rhyme forever voyaging, bled from all lights and colors, from all smells and sounds. Just the lyric on the monochrome display, and you're proud to make another verse appear. By solving riddles, if you didn't have to sleep, you know you'd never seek acquittal. You'd be ever in the middle, in the midst of a quest. If it wasn't for dawn, the gown, you'd never get dressed. In your underwear typing, just like front, keyboard attached up to my fingers, wrists bare the brunt. As I seek to do stunts and flip through their descriptions, I think I went once to some sands that were Egyptian. And I retain plane ticket snapshots, receipts. Yes, I stand unconvinced that this has happened to me. I wouldn't want to misremember or get confused. Recall a crawling towards a pyramid, appearing over dunes. Recall of entering the thing and descending stairs. Does it descend from there? Adventure to nightmare. Did I battle?